Okay, we're starting here on the top of Dalet Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the issue of Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. We mentioned in specific Tanaic works as to what the purpose or the necessity for that detailing is. So the Gemara says, Hakol Chayavim v'mikra Megila. Everyone is obligated in Mikra Megila. Kohanim, Leviim, Yisraelim. Again, Pshita, who else would be Chayav? Lo Tzricha, we need it, Libatel, Avodatam, in order to desist or leave their avoda in order to read the Megillah. Ukad Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Kohanim ba'avodatam, Kohanim are doing their avoda in the Mikdash. Leviim beduchanan, Leviim who are involved with the duchan, in playing the music or the accompaniment to the korbanot, Yisrael ba'mamadam, and Yisrael involved in the mamadot, which is the representation of Klal Yisrael by the korbanot tzibur. You need a representative by every korban. Leviim Rishonim set up a cycle of 24, similar to the Mishmerei HaKohanim and Leviim, that amongst Klal Yisrael there will also be 24 regions. Each week, one of those regions would then send up representatives to Yerushalayim in order to be by the korbanot. So that is Yisrael v'ma'amadan. All of them can leave their posts and go to hear the Megillah, because seemingly Megillah carries extra weight because of Pirsumei Nisa. Given the Pirsumei Nisa aspect of Mikra Megillah, it trumps even Avoda in the Mikdash. Now that's very difficult because Mikra Megillah is Midrabanan, and Avoda in the Mikdash is a Din D'Oraita. And generally, we would not say that a din derabonon is doche a din deoraita, even in the cases of persume nisa. That leads to basically a spectrum of rishonim in the Gemara in Megillah, dealing with the issues of osek mitzvah, patur mena mitzvah. And in that case, you have all the way across the spectrum from those that say, this is only true when you can do the avoda later, in that you desist from the avoda temporarily in order to do the mitzvah Mikra Megillah, but that doesn't mean that if you were going to lose the avoda completely, that we would allow you to do this. So in its essence, it's just an issue of kadima. What goes first? So in the case where the avoda would not be nitbatel, then Mikra Megillah goes first because of Pirsumei Nisa. On the other end of the spectrum, you have those that say, then Eino Chanami. Pirsumei Nisa is such an important factor that we would override avoda midoraita, even if the avoda would have been lost in this situation and you wouldn't be able to do it. We nevertheless say that you go and do mikra megillah because of the aspect of pirsumei nisa. Again, even though it's derabonon, and even though generally avoda, one of the most important things, we know that it's docha many items. So despite that fact, mikra megillah trumps in that situation, which sounds like the pashtut of the statement here and the pashtut of the gemara there. Others come up with compromises between them, depending on what the circumstance is. If the avoda can be done ayidei acherim, then you would give up the avoda in order to go hear the Megillah. If it can't be done ayidei acherim, then you would go to their avoda in the Mikdash. Or maybe this is only in a situation where the time for Mikra Megillah is passing, and therefore we tell you to go do Mikra Megillah, even though at the expense of avoda at this moment, because you're going to lose Mikra Megillah. So in that way, you have across the spectrum different views, partly influenced by what your view is with regards to Osek Mitzvah, Patur Mena Mitzvah, what's the meaning of that, and then as well as what you think the strength of Pirsumei Nisa is, even when we're dealing with Dinei Derabanan. That's why over here, everybody has mentioned to tell you that even in their particular jobs associated with the Avoda, especially the Kohanim, Ba'avodatam, that they're nitbatel for Mikra Megillah. Kol chayavim b'zimun. Everyone is chayav in zimun. Kohanim, Leviim, v'Yisraelim. Again, pshita. Lo tzricha, taka'achle kodoshim. It's a case where the Kohanim are eating kodoshim. Salkadat kamina. I would have thought with regards to their achilat kodoshim, v'achlu otam asher kupar bahem. Amar Rachmana, the Torah says, the Kohanim eat the korbanot, and by that, they provide kapara, which is so Kohanim Ochlim Vabalim mit kaprim. Kohanim eat and the Balim gain kapara from that. Va'kaparai, and this kapara then is not subject to the din of Zimun. Whether that means Zimun literally or means Birkat HaMazon is not clear here, because the pasuk they're going to quote, The Gemara in Brachot uses to learn both of them, primarily Birkat HaMazon, but also Birkat HaZimun. But the idea would be that since this is first of all done in an obligatory fashion, you're eating not because you want to eat, you're eating because you must eat. That's a demand on the Kohanim, that the Kohanim have to eat in order to provide kapara. Secondarily, the purpose of your eating here is kapara. And so maybe that purpose then makes it that you're not subject to zimun, because by zimun, there's a requirement that you eat and you are satisfied. You're eating for the satisfaction. And given that, here where you're eating for kapara, or to provide kapara, maybe you should be exempt. So the hava mina is, you wouldn't be subject to zimun, or you wouldn't be subject to birkat hamazon. The answer is, kamashlan bachalta visavata amar rachmano. The pasuk says, you eat and you're satisfied, vayitnu, and that you have here. Or in essence, it's very similar to the concept that ein mitasek bechalavim va'arayot. There's no such concept as being unaware or not benefiting from eating and from engaging in arayot. There are many different halakhot with regards to mitasek. Where you're doing something and you don't realize that you're doing something wrong. So for instance, you're cutting on Shabbat and you don't realize, depending on Rashi or Tosafot, you don't realize whether you're cutting something that's attached or you don't realize that you're cutting an item that you didn't think you were cutting. You make a mistake, you get lost in your thoughts, and you do something without really thinking about it. That's called mitasek. The Gemara says, by chalavim and rayot, there is no such concept. So if you're mitasek and then you eat, in the end, the eating provides satisfaction. Doesn't matter why you ate or whether you realize what you're eating. In the end, you benefit from that which you eat. And same thing with regards to arayot. And that's what the Gemara is saying over here. Doesn't matter why you're eating. Doesn't matter if you're eating because you're compelled to. It's a chovah. Doesn't matter that you're eating because there's kapara. In the end, you are satisfied. You gain that satisfaction and the enjoyment from the eating. And if that's the case, you fulfilled the requirement of achalta visavata. And given that, you're going to be chayav in zimun. You're going to be chayav in birkat hamazon. And that's also something that we see with regards to nizikin, animals that go and eat. And in certain situations, they are patur. Nevertheless, the balim still have to pay for the hana'ah. They may not have to pay for the nezek done to whatever the property or the items that were eaten, but they still have to pay for the benefit that the animal garnered from eating. You still have to compensate, and that's because the hana is something that happens basically automatically when one consumes, and that's similar over here. Ko mitztarfim lezimun, anyone can join a zimun. Kohanim levim v'yisraelim. Again, pshita, why shouldn't they be able to join a zimun? Lo tzricha deka'achle kohanim truma. The case where the Kohanim reading Truma, O Kodoshim, otherwise Kodoshim, things that other people can't participate in. These are items that only a Kohen can eat. The Zayar Ka'achel Chulin. And the Zayar that's there is eating Chulin. Sakadat Kamin Obi Ibo Yizar Namechel Vade Kohen Lo Matzi Achel. Since the Zayar can't join the Kohen in that which he is partaking of, Ema Lo Litztarif. Maybe they shouldn't join together to make a Zimun because of the difference in what they're eating. Kamash Balan. Nehi desire by the Kohen lo matzi achel. Even though there may not be a bilateral relationship over here whereby the desire can eat that which the Kohen's eating, nevertheless, unilaterally, the Kohen, by the desire matzi achel. The Kohen can eat that which the desire is eating. He can partake of the chulin. And therefore, that's sufficient to allow you to join together. In order for there to be a zimun or a joining of the parties that are eating together to create the force of Zimun, you have to be able to be partaking of the same Suda. In essence, you have to really be eating together. Eating together doesn't simply mean that we're sitting at the same table eating that which we eat. It means that we could share that what we would eat. That's one of the halachot with regards to benching. If someone shows up after you ate and then they eat something, they can be mitzaref to the Zimun if other parties that are there would also partake of the item. So even though they finished eating, you can join someone to the Zimun as long as that when that person's eating, the others would have eaten or can eat again or would partake in that item. So the idea is to break bread together. That only works if you can share the food that you're eating. So that leads to, for instance, the Baalei Tosafot saying over here, if the individuals are mudrei hana'ah from each other, if they are restricted in getting benefit from each other, Tosafot speculates that maybe there should not be able to be a zimun. because they can't partake of the same meal because they're not allowed to get hana from each other. He then backs away from it a little bit and says maybe they could get Hatarat Nedarim. And Hatarat Nedarim would allow them to eat together, so maybe then, okay, because there is a way for them to eat together. The Yeshit Mikubetza says that he thinks it's straightforward that it's Batar Hashtaz Lina, going after what the status is right now, not the possible situations in which they could eat together. If they can't eat together now, then that's good. If they can't, they can't. And so therefore he thinks that when they're Mudre Anah, that they can't make a Mesuman. What would be interesting is what happens if you have different parties eating milchik and fleshiks. You have basar and chalav. Can you make a zimun with people eating basar and chalav? It's the exact same situation almost that we have here, which is the person eating basar cannot partake in the chalav. The person who's eating the chalav, after kinuach v'adacha, they could partake in the basar. So it's similar to the truma case, where the kohen can participate in the chulin, but the zar can't participate in the truma. And seemingly, then it would be fine to make a zimun in that manner because of the ability of one of the parties to partake in the other's eating. So here again, you'd have to look at each case individually to see that if there's a capacity or ability for them to share in that which they are partaking of, that creates the connection or the union to make it into a zimun, which is the important aspect. The Rishonim that discuss zimun in the seventh perek in Brachot, they speak about when do you create what's called the Kviyat HaSu'udah. What makes it that you are joined together, become a single entity for eating? Is that you sit down together? Or does it mean that at some point you eat together? There are all different views in the Rishonim with regards to this. But the idea being, again, that you can partake together of the same food that is being eaten. Akol Marichin. Now we get back to our Mishnah, which is Akol Marichin Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. So then why do you need Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim in our Mishnah? Pshita. Again, why would you think otherwise? Amarava lo nitzracha le ben Bukhri. We need it for the drosha ben Bukhri, which we've seen before in Masechet Shkalim and in Masechet Menachot, which is the Tanan. Amri Yehuda, Haid ben Bukhri biyavne, ko kohen sheshokel eino chote. Any kohen that gives machatzita shekel is not in violation, it's not a chet. Amar lo Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. Yochanan ben Zakkai says, lo chen. That's not the right way to think about it. El ko kohen sheeno shokel. Any kohen that doesn't give a shekel, chote, is a sinner. Ela, shakohenim dorshim mikraze latzman. The kohenim are doresh in their own benefit. V'chol minchat kohen, kalil tiyeh lo teachel. We have the restriction against the mincha of a kohen being eaten. So if a kohen brings a mincha, it goes kalil al mizbeach. It's not eaten like other minachot, where the kometz is taken off and put in the mizbeach, and the remainder is eaten by the kohenim. Over here, everything goes on the mizbeach. V'hoel, v'omer ushtei alechem, melechem apanim, shelanu heim. The kohenim make the claim that if we contribute towards the machatzita shekel, from that machatzita shekel, they're going to purchase the omer, which is a form of mincha. The shtei alechem on Shavuot, form of mincha. And the lechem apanim, a form of mincha. So they also belong to the kohenim. Heyachem nechalim. Then how can they be eaten? They are kodshei kodeshim. They are menachot of the tzibur. And if we're participating in them, then the pasuk of v'chol minchat kohen kalil tiyeh lo teachel should apply to those items, and therefore you can't eat them. So the Gemara is suggesting that according to Ben Bukhri, whereby kohenim are not chayav in machatzita shekel, there would be this havamina that they should also not participate in the world of Arachim, which we'll see in a second, that there's a pasuk in Perek Chav Zayin in Vayikra that connects between the two of them. So that's the Havamina here, that if you're not in the world of Machatzita Shekel, you're also not in the world of Arachim. So that's the Havamina here, that the Kohanim wouldn't participate. According to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, it's not even a question. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai believes that the Kohanim are Chayav Meikar Adin in Machatzita Shekel. So it's interesting to know here, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai is the one who lived through the Churban Bayit. And here they're discussing about Machatzita Shekel in Yavne. Yavne was set up post the Churban Bayit, or in the time of the Churban Bayit. That means that the discussion, the issue of Machatzita Shekel, it sounds like they were still collecting the Machatzita Shekel at that point, even post the Churban. And again, we noted this before in Bechorot, makes it sound like when the Romans come to put down the merit, the rebellion of Bar Kokhba, they end up taking large sums of money from Yerushalayim. And that likely is because of the collections of the Machatzit HaShekel, which they continued. And they had started to rebuild the Mikdash, or start the service of the Mikdash again during the time of Bar Kokhba. And that's why the Romans are very adamant about not only throwing the Jews out of Yerushalayim, but plowing over the Har HaBayit, the area where the Mikdash was, and renaming the city of Yerushalayim to take away any hope from the Jews of returning there or rebuilding the Mikdash, because it's clear here, even after the Churban, that in Merid Bar Kokhba, they started to try to do that again, or to restart again because of that. So now, in this machloket here, the Gemara gives a much more fundamental description of their machloket, which is that Ben Bukhri is not simply saying that any Kohen who gives Machatzit HaShekel Einu Choteh is not sinning, but he doesn't have to give it because of what we say here by Yochanan Ben Zakkai, because of the issue of Minchat Kalil. He rather has a more fundamental reason, which is B'chol Over HaPikudim. It says there, Zeyitnu. The one who gives the Machatzit HaShekel is the one that's subject to the Pikudim. The Pikud was only for B'nai Yisrael. They were the ones that were counted from 20 to 60. B'nai Levi weren't counted in that Pikud. So his view is that seemingly both Kohanim and maybe Levim as well would not have to give the Machatzit HaShekel because they were not covered by the Pikudim. He actually has a very strong claim. B'chol Over HaPikudim is the definition of who gives, that you know, who gives the Machatzit HaShekel. Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai, there, the Gemara says, disagrees, because he says, Kol Over HaPikudim is not the Pikud of Moshe, the counting of the people, rather, Kol Over BeYamsuf. Anybody who crossed through the Yamsuf is subject to Machatzit HaShekel, which is a more strained reading of the Pasuk. It's not as easy to read the Pasuk that way, but he also, obviously, is leaning on Chazal's interpretation that the Machatzit HaShekel is three different collections, as Rashi says, by the Truma. And over there, you could argue that Zerubel Pikudim is only a reference to one of those collections, not necessarily the collection for the Korbanot HaTzibur. It could be the collection of the Adanim. It could be the collections of the donations. Maybe there, you have the Pikudim be the defined parties. But outside of that, meaning for the donations towards the Korbanot HaTzibur, that would not be the case. Ben Bukhri Nami, Kevin Delechat Filo Lo Mechaive, Lituye, since they're not obligated to bring it, Kimaite Nami Chotehu. Then when they bring it, they should be a Choteh, meaning the Kama'ayu Chulin Lazara. Because then they're contributing something which they're not obligated to bring. The Machatzit HaShekel is an obligation. Therefore, the Korbanot HaTzibur are purchased from it because those are the monies of the Tzibur that you're obligated to bring. If the Kohanim are not Chayav, according to Ben Bukhri, then why are they able to opt in and put in a Machatzit HaShekel? It's equivalent to bringing an extra Machatzit HaShekel for an individual, which we would not accept, because it's an obligatory donation that comes from each individual, and aggregated, they make up the monies of the Tzibur to purchase the Korbanot HaTzibur. If we allow the Kohanim to put it in, then basically you have money that is not part of that obligation, private money, that is now being used to purchase the Korbanot HaTzibur. And therefore, the Korbanot HaTzibur are going to be Chulin Lazara. It's obviously not the Machatzit HaShekel that's Chulin Lazara. It is the Korbanot purchased with it that are going to be Chulin Lazara, because they're now given by private donations. So my answer is the Maitilo Umasar the Tzibur. That when they bring them, they donate them or give them over to the Tzibur. Whether they explicitly have to say that they're giving it or they made a separate collection for the Kohanim that were then donated to the Tzibur as a whole, or whether by definition or by default, it's as if they're giving it to Tzibur, because when they give the Machatzit HaShekel, they know that those are monies of the Tzibur, and therefore it's deemed to be monies of the Tzibur. So according to Ben Bukhri, first of all, you're a patur. That's because of the pasuk that we quoted before, V'chol Over HaPikudim. Patur legamre. If you choose to opt in, you can't do so only under the condition that you donate the money to the Tzibur. So far as Ben Bukhri is concerned, there's no obligation whatsoever, and that's the support for his position. So that's brought over here in Perek of Zayin Pasuk Chafei, where it says, so there you have a connection between the Shekel HaKodesh, which is associated with the Machatzit HaShekel, and Arachin. So you would have thought, anyone who's subject to the din of Machatzit HaShekel, the Kohanim and Levim are not according to Ben Bukhri, then they would be subject to the din of Arachin. Fani goanim, oh, but let no bishkalim, let no barachin. So maybe they should have no din of barachin. Kamash malan, that we don't read it that way. Likely the kamash malan is that the word erkacha that's used over here is not about arachin. The word erkacha means the value or the assessed value of. Don't read it as b'chol erkacha yeh b'shekel ha-kodesh, your arachin have to be that way. Erkacha means all assessments that you give to the mikdash have to be b'shekel ha-kodesh. Now with regards to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position is the following. Kol aver ha-pikudim is not about the count, but rather about crossing over the Yam Suf. So he believes that fundamentally the Kohanim are obligated. Now the claim against Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's position is that the Kohanim say, even according to you, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, we shouldn't be able to bring the Machatzita Shekel, and that's where it says, Ela Dorshim Pasuk Zeh La'atzman. They do this under the rubric of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. According to Ben Bukhri, they don't even need to make darshan this pasuk. According to Ben Bukhri, they're fundamentally patur because of a kol aver ha-pikudim. The reason they need the pasuk is if you subscribe to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai's view that they are chayavim because aver ha-pikudim is not the count, but rather those that went through the Yam Suf, then you can also be doresh this pasuk to say they can't bring it because of the fact that then they'll be shutafim in the menachot of the tzibur, and that would mean that it's a minchat kohen, it should be kalil. And then how can the kohenim eat it? So they're trying to exempt themselves even under the rubric of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, and that's why Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, dorshim pasuk ze la'atzman. They're doresh that pasuk to their benefit under the view that they are really chayavim. They're saying, even if you think we're chayavim, we shouldn't have to give because of the problem minchat kalil. The obvious answer is that there's a difference between minchat tzibur and minchat yachid. Either because the chol minchat kohen, when it belongs to the kohen, that's when there's a kalil, not when it belongs to the tzibur. Rashi goes one step further and says, you're dictated by the rov. Since the rov of the contributors here are Yisraelim, then the rov owners of this mincha are Yisraelim, and that governs what the status of the mincha is. So Rashi says it based on rov. You could just say it more fundamentally, which is, the mincha minchat kohen is when it's a minchat kohen, not when it's a minchat tzibur. Minchat tzibur is not a minchat kohen, and therefore their claim is incorrect. So, Amalei Abaye. Now, Abaye says to Rava, who said that this is the reason we have kohanim over here, is to tell you that they're still chayav in arachin, according to Ben Bukhri. Hi, b'chol erkecha, b'chol arachim, shata marich, lo yu p'chutim isela hu da'ata. You're trying to learn the havamina from this pasuk, Perech of Zayin, Pasuk Chavtei, b'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel ha-kodesh, that you have a havamina that creates a hekesh between arachim and machatzit ha-shekel, that you can't do because the pasuk is necessary for something else, which is that, b'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel ha-kodesh, the minimum amount that you can give to hekesh is shekel ha-kodesh. It's giving you a baseline minimum of value that you can contribute. It actually has implications by arachim, which we're going to see later on, which is the fact that imachu, someone who donated arachim and he's too poor to pay for whatever he donated, then there's an assessment by the kohen to determine what he can pay. And over here, the Gemara is telling us that the minimum amount that he can assess is a shekel. That means if he assesses him for a shekel or more, whatever he pays discharges his obligation. If he can't even afford a shekel, then the chov remains outstanding, and he can't give some sort of in-lieu payment to cover his neder over here, because it doesn't meet the minimum threshold of a shekel. But once you do that, you can't have a havamina that this was a hekesh between arachin and shekel ha-kodesh, because you're already using it for some other limud. Hello, Amar Abaye. It's true. We need it for this reason. Sachadat chamino in Parshat Korach, it says, Hoktev uptuyav mi ben chodesh tifteh be'erkecha. The puzzle that speaks about the redemption in the Pidyon HaBen mentions in there pidyon, and also mentions erkecha. So called ite b'pidyon haben, ite b'arachin. The havamina would have been, anyone who's subject to pidyon haben would be subject to the parsha of arachin. V'ani koim ho v'letnu b'pidyon haben. Since they don't have a din with regards to pidyon haben, letnu b'arachin. They also don't have a din with regards to arachin. So that would have been the havamina. The kamash malon of the breita is we don't say that. Even though they're patur from pidyon haben because of the kal v'chomer, if they could release the Yisraelim in the midbar, then certainly they can release themselves from pidyon haben. And since they are p'turim in pidyon haben, you would have thought they're patur me'arachin. Kamash Balan, that they're not. We say that the Kohanim are Chayav in the Parsha of Arachin. And the word Erkecha, again, that's being used by Pidyona Ben, means assessment or value, not Arachin. And that's why it's not a good Hekesh. But that's the Kamash Balan. Don't make such a Hekesh. Amrele Rava. So then Rava says to him, Elameato, based on what you're saying here, Gabe El Asham, by the Asham Gzelot, when it says, Dichtiv, Bet Ashamo Yavil Hashem, Ayel Tamim Minatzon, Be'erkecha. Again, the word Erech is used over there in association with the Asham. Hachanami, Dukhot Ite Be'arachin, Ite Be'el Asham. You're going to tell me now, anyone who's in the Parshia of Arachin is subject to El Asham. Tumtum Vajroginus, who we saw in our Mishnah, are not the Letnu Barachin, Letnu Be'el Asham. Who don't have a din of Arachin, they're not included in the Parsha of Arachin. Maybe they should also not have to bring an El Asham. Now, obviously, Rava doesn't think this is a real limud, and this is not accepted the halacha at all. But the Hava Mina, based on what you're saying, is that if you think the word Erkecha means Arachin, and therefore any time the word Erkecha appears in the Torah, you have to somehow associate it with the Parsha of Arachin, then you would get an absurd result, which is that by Hashem Gzelot, Tumtum and Anjoginos would be excluded from that El Asham, and we never find, first of all, such a thing, and we never find a Reboy to include them. Maybe you could say in Hachanami, but it doesn't seem to make any sense that they should be excluded from that Asham. El Amarova Vite Maravashi. So now Rava proposes what the significance over here is, and some say Ravashi. Itzrich Salkadat Chamina. We need the Kohanim here, because I would have thought, Hol Bichtiv Be'emido Lifnei HaKohen, that you have to stand up before the Kohen, V'lo Kohen Lifnei Kohen, but not a Kohen before a Kohen. So that's found here in the Parshia of Arachin, where it deals with Imachu. If he is too poor to pay it, Achu Me'erkecha Ve'emido Lifnei HaKohen, you stand him before the Kohen, Ve'erich Oto HaKohen, Al-Pi Asher Tzig Yadonu there, Yarichenu HaKohen. The word Kohen appears three times there. You have to stand before the Kohen, he's going to assess what it is that you can afford to pay for the Arachin. The Parshia began, Daber El B'nei Yisrael, V'amart Aleihem. Speak to B'nei Yisrael. So, in the context of the Parsha, the subject of who's standing before the Kohanim is Daber El B'nei Yisrael. B'nei Yisrael stand before the Kohen. So, based on the Daber El B'nei Yisrael and the emphasis of Kohen here in the Machu Pasuk, then you would have thought that only when it is a Yisrael that's standing before the Kohen, then you are subject to the din of Arachin. But not a Kohen that's standing before another Kohen. That would not be included in the Parshia of Arachin. The Kamash Malan is, that's not the case. The word B'nai Yisrael includes Kohanim as well. So B'nai Yisrael doesn't just mean exclusively Yisraelim. It means B'nai Yisrael means Kohanim and Levim as well. And even a Kohen who's standing before a Kohen would be subject to the Parshia of Arachin. And that is then, according to Rava, the reason you need to mention Kohanim in our Mishnah, because of Kol Marichin, Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim, the Chiddush again is Kohanim, and maybe Levim as well, depending on which one of the Limudim here. We had three attempts to explain what the Chiddush was, the first of which was Machatzita Shekel, then we had Abaye, who says it's connected to Pidyon HaBen, and then we had Rava, who says that it has to do with the Ve'emido Lifnei HaKohen, that you would have thought only Israel before Kohen, not Kohen before Kohen, and then we say Kamash Malan, in each of these cases, that the Kohanim are subject to the din of Arachin. Now, the Gemara says, Ne'arachim le'atuye. So, as Rashi points out over here, this is as if you said Amar Mar. It's like the equivalent in other Masechtot. We say Amar Mar means we want to go back and discuss or investigate something you said earlier and to plumb the depths of that issue. That was that we said before that Ne'arachim, on the beginning of the Gemara, on Daf Bet, that why did you say there Hakol Nerachim? That came Latuye Minuval Umukashkin. That came to include someone who was disgusting, or Mukashkin was covered in boils and blisters. People who, in essence, according to the Gemara, have no value. They're still subject to the din of Arachin, because Arachin only look at gender and age. They don't look at value at all. Minahani Mile, how do you know that a Minuval and a Mukashkin are subject to Arachin? The Tanur Banan, Be'erkecha, Le'avi Erech Stam. When it says Be'erkecha in the Pasuk, that comes to teach you that Erech Stam, you're going to be Chayav. I'm going to leave this because the Gemara is going to go back to this Braita numerous times to explain what it is meant by each line of the Braita. So we'll come back and discuss what it means Erech Stam. Davar acher, berchacha. The word berchacha teaches you, erech kulohu notain, below erech evarim. Then you give the erech of the entire individual, not the erech of a particular limb. Yocho shani motzei ab davar sheneshamat luyabo. You would think then, if you say erech with regards to a particular limb, that is a life-sustaining limb, that maybe over there you wouldn't have to pay. Talmud Lomar, nafshot. That's why you have the word nafshot to tell you that you do have to pay in that situation. So nafshot below amet. It says nafshot and not someone who's already passed away. They're not subject to arachin. Even though, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, v'afagav dasur ba'ana'am in a Torah, even though a mate is a surah in a Torah, and therefore it has no value clearly because it's a surbana, nevertheless, we just said that value is not the determining factor for arachin, because a menuva and a mukeshchin are subject to arachin, even though they're not subject to damim. So the havamina here is that even a cadaver, someone who's passed away, would still be subject to the world of arachin. You would look at their age, their gender, and you'd pay it, even though they are quote-unquote valueless at this moment. So that's why we have nafshot below damet. Somebody who's alive, not someone who has passed away. Otziat amet below tziat goses. I would think to exclude a mate and not someone who's teetering between life and death, then maybe they should be subject to arachin. Tamalomar ve'emid ve'erich. It says in the pasuk, v'machu, if he's too poor, then you have to stand him before the kohen in order to assess him. Kol she'yishno ba'amada, yesho ba'aracha. If you can stand up, then there's a din of haracha. Because she'enu ba'amada, you can't stand up, enu ba'aracha. And this goses, who's teetering between life and death, certainly cannot stand up. He can't stand up, he's not in the world of arachin. Now we exclude a goses. Even though, as the Balei HaTosafot point out, in the Gemara in Chulin, we said that if you shecht an animal, v'adayin mifarkeset, and it's still flopping around, that still allows you to have a hamada of aracha. He says, why over there is that work for a mother of Arocha? And over here a goses can't have a din of a mother of Arocha. So Tosafot gives two answers. One answer of which is that animals are just stronger than human beings. And therefore, even after an animal is shechted, it could still stand there for a moment in order to have the mother of Arocha done. Whereas a human being in this state won't be able to stand, period. So he just says that it's a physical strength difference. So there's an alternate answer brought by the Shittu Vemetzet in the name of the Rosh, which is Arosh Teretz, Dlo Dami, Deshchita, Apopi, Sheni, Yochola, Lachyot, Adan Yeshba, Koach, Chiyut. Even though an animal that's shechted cannot live, it still has life force in it. And therefore, Yochola, Midali, Freyrega. Therefore, you can stand it up for a moment. On the other hand, Aval, Goseis, Apopi, Sheyachol, Lachyot. Even though a Goseis can live, but it doesn't have Chiyut in him. So he distinguishes between the ability to live, and chiyut, the strength of life. He says the behema has the strength of life, even though it won't live. And the human being, even though he will live, doesn't have chiyut in him. And that makes the distinction in whether you can have hamoda v'arocha over here. Davar acher, another thing, nafshot, enei ele echad she'erich echad. It's only if someone does one haracha of another party. Echad she'erich mea, someone who does erech for numerous people, the way that the Balei HaTosafot would say over here, erech b'lashon yachid. He says, erech, ploni, ploni, uploni, uploni. And he does it b'lashon yachid, minayin. How do I know that works? Tamalomar, nafshot. Nafshot in plural. Davar acher, nafshot. The word nafshot comes to teach you, ein li ele ish, sheirich. I only have a situation in which a man is marich, benish, benisha. Whether it's a man or a woman, because that's nafshot. Isha sheiricha ish, a woman that does a haracha of a man, or Yisha she'ericha Yisha, or she does it for another woman, minayin, tamalomar, nafshot. The word nafshot tells us anybody who is doing arachin has a din of the parshiyah of arachin. Doesn't matter if you are an ish, doesn't matter if you are a woman. The parshiyah begins, ish ki afli neder be'erkecha. You would have thought maybe it's limited to an ish. Nafshot comes to teach you that it's not limited to an ish. Even a woman who does arachin will be subject to the parshiyah of arachin. Davar acher, nafshot, l'rabot menuval u'mukashchin. Nafshot comes to tell you that a menuval and a mukashchin are included in the parshiyah of arachin. Shayachol, this would have been the hava mina to exclude them, because the parshiyah begins, neder be'erkecha. I would have thought anybody who's subject to neder, neder is where you commit the value of the individual to the Mikdash, anybody subject to neder, be'er kecha, is subject to arachin. So, kol she'enu bedamim, anybody who does not have value, enu barachin. That would have been your thought process. If that's the case, menuval, menukashkin, that have no damim value, should also not be subject to arachin. Talmud Omar nafshot, tell you that irrespective of value, as long as you're alive, you're subject to the parshia of arachin. Vaya erkecha. It says that this will be your erech, lirabot tumtum androgynous lidamim. That comes to teach you that tumtum and androgynous are included with regards to monetary value. Shiachol. I would have had the same havamin I had before, just in the opposite direction. Neder berkecha. Koshi yeshno barachin, yeshno bedamim. Anybody who's subject to the parshia of arachin is also subject to the parshia of damim, of value. Anyone who's not subject to the parshia of arachin will not be subject to value. Androgynous and tumtum, we already discussed, are excluded from the parshia of arachin because it says nekeva, zachar nekeva, zachar vadai, nekeva vadait, not a tumtum and an androgynous. Some people drop the word tumtum from this because a tumtum is a safek and the Torah doesn't address this safek, so maybe tumtum should be dropped. Tamalomar, vaya erkecha, hazachar. Zachar, velo, again here, it's not clear whether tumtum should be included in the girsa or not. Zachar, velo tumtum androgynous. A zachar, and not a tumtum androgynous. Lo chol yoyu be'erech ish, aval yoyu be'erech isha. So maybe it won't be included for a male erech, but maybe they'll be included in the female erech. Tamalomar, vaya erkecha, hazachar, ve'im nekevahi. Zachar vadai, nekeva vadait. Only if you're vadai zachar, vadai nekeva, are you included in this parshia. Hello, tumtum da androgynous. We're not included in this parshia. This is the entirety of the Braita. The Gemara is now going to go back and go through the Braita and understand each one of the lines in the Braita. Most problematic in the Braita is the fact that the Braita learns numerous items from the same word. How do you learn multiple limudim from one word? Every word can only provide one limud. How does it do this and bring two or three limudim for every excess that it mentions in here? Now the Gemara says, Amar Mar, Be'er Kecha, the word Be'er Kecha, which was the first line in the Braita, there are both Erech Stam. That comes to include Erech Stam. My Erech Stam. What is Erech Stam? What are you speaking about? That doesn't give you any information. It seems to be pretty cryptic what an Erech Stam is. Titania, Haomer Erech Stam Alai, someone who says that I'm donating stam erech, notem pachot she barachin. You give the lowest denomination of arachin, which is a female between the age of 1 month and 5 years, which is 3 shkalim. Vekama pachot she barachin. What's that lowest number? 3 shkalim, 3 shekel. Veima chamishim. Why do you pick 3? If you say stam, pick the highest one. Get paid 50. Why should you have to pay 3? Gemara invokes the principle, tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Tafasta muat, tafasta. If you take the biggest number, you're not certain if you got it right. Take the smallest number, you're right no matter what. The idea being that if you pick 50, who says it's 50? Maybe it's some other number that it should be. So when you pick 50, you're only right if it was 50. Any other number, you would have been wrong about that. The other hand, if you pick 3, subsumed in every other number is 3. 3 is good for 3. It's also good for 5, 10, 50. Any other number also has 3 in it. So therefore, since if you take that number, it would work for any other number that you spoke about. It would at least be a partial piece of any other number. Therefore, it makes more sense to be omeg on the lowest number rather than on the highest number. And that's why you pay pachot shemishkalim. So now, what's interesting here is, what did the person exactly say? So Rashi, early on, says, Amar harei alai erech. He just says, I accept on myself an erech. That's what it means, stam. Stam's not part of the formulation. It's a description of how he expressed or articulated the erech. But Jesus said, harei alai erech. That's a stam erech, because he doesn't define who the individual is, who the object of his neder arachin is. If you look later in the Rashi, and the way Tosfos quotes Rashi also, he says, Lomer Damar Erech Stam Alai. So there Rashi includes the word stam in the articulation of what he says. So in one place he just says, Hare Erech Alai. In other places he says that he says Erech Stam Alai. It's not clear here whether the word Stam is a part of the formulation or is it a description of what he is articulating, whether the word Stam is actually part of that phrase or not part of the phrase. That's the first thing. The Tosva brings in the Tosefta that a person who says Erech Alai Erech Stam actually has to bring 5 shekel and not 3 shekel. That's the lowest of the male numbers. 1 month to 5 years brings 5 shekel. Tosfot tries to differentiate between the Tosefta, where he said, Stam Zachar, he gave an Erech, but he defined which of the genders and tables he would be subject to. That when you say Erech Zachar Stam, then that applies 5 shekel is the minimum. If you just say Erech Stam, then that is 3 shekel. Where it says, Vema Shekel, why is 3 the lowest? Maybe a shekel is the lowest. That's what we just said before, that the minimum payments in assessment or values is 1 shekel. So we do find a lower threshold. Maybe that should be what he's referencing to. That's only when you can't afford the tables, and then we look to see what you can afford. That's the number that's mentioned. But that's not the primary arachin or any of the default arachin that you would have counted. It's not a number mentioned by the Torah in terms of the tables of arachin. It says, well, you made it so logical and so obvious now. Why do you need a pasuk to teach you that? You're telling me that the reason you pay 3 shekel is because that's the lowest number. 1 shekel doesn't count because it says a gyad, and you wouldn't pay a bigger number because of tafasta meruba lo tafasta. Those are all logical arguments. Once you've done that, why do you need a pasuk to tell you that you pay the 3 shekel? Why do you need vaya be'er kachad to tell you echstam is that? To tell you that you don't get the benefit of hesed yad. My time out, what's the reason? Give me a faresh dummy. It's as if you said it explicitly. So this is a distinction with regards to hesed yad. If a person commits a fixed amount to the mikdash, for instance, he says that I'm going to give 50 shekel to Bedek Abayit, there's no din of hesed yad. You don't go and say, what can he afford now? He committed a number. He's obligated to fulfill that number in order to discharge his nether. And until he reaches that number, he hasn't discharged the nether. There's no allowances that are given to him. On the other hand, when it comes to the parshia of arachin, there the Torah specifies that if a person commits to the erech, then he is open to the possibility, if he can't afford it, that he gets a dispensation of hesed yad. Then we look at what he can afford, and then he can discharge the obligation based on what he can afford. What Rav Nachman is pointing out over here is that there is a difference between erech of a particular individual or person themselves versus if you say erech stam. Erech stam is as if you said straight out, I'm going to give 3 shekel to the Mikdash. The other hand, when you say, I'm going to give erech of Reuven, Shimon, Levi to the Mikdash, then that's not an explicit or mifurash expression of the arachin, and therefore you're subject to hesed yad. Rashi gives a seemingly complex understanding of that. He says, how's that different? You just look up in the table and you know the amount. So if you know the amount, then why is that different than saying erech stam, where you also know the amount? In neither case did you express the amount. In both cases, you know what the amount is going to be. Rashi says, it's not clear. Not everybody knows how old they are, or really how old the other party is. You're saying erech Reuven alai. You have no idea how old Reuven is. Since you don't know, then there's a possibility that it's an unknown number until you check out what his age is. Here it's clear that it's 3 shekel because he did not condition it on a particular individual on their age. He simply said that it's 3 shekel because that's the lowest amount. That's how Rashi explains it. It's very convoluted because what happens in a situation where you do Erki Alai and you know what your value is? What happens if you know what the age of the individual is? Does that then become an expression of the absolute value? So you could read Rashi as not saying that in every case it's that way, but generically there is a certain amount of uncertainty when you say Erech of a person, whereas when you say Erech Stam, there is no uncertainty. That might be what he's saying, although it seems that Rashi is saying more than that, that underlying the erech of an individual is this unknown aspect of what their age is. Whereas when you say erech stam, you know what the value is. Tosafot, on the other hand, says that's not how to look at it. He says near the Faresh, Kimur Faresh Dami, that when you say, Hare Alai Shlosh Tlaim, then that's the same as when you said, Hare Alai Erech Stam, as if I said Shlosh Shkalim. If I say Shlosh Shkalim, there's no din of Hesed Yad involved over here. Basically, what he's saying is that you're not subject to the Gzeret HaKatuv of Parshiyat Arachin. In order to be in the Parshiyat of Arachin, you need to be working within the confines of Arachin. That means you need to be in the lookup tables. I have to be giving it an age and a gender. I do that by pointing to an individual or making the object of my nether. Once I've done that, then you open up the possibility that Gzeret HaKatuv of Hesed Yad applies to me. If I don't do that, where I'm saying, Hare Alai Erech Stam, or Hare Alai Stam Erech, over there I'm not using the tables anymore. I'm simply saying that I'm going to give 3 shekel. Once you're there, you're outside of the parshia of Arachin, and Hesed Yad doesn't apply to you. The way Tosafot expresses it, it is an issue of Gzeret HaKatuv. Hesed Yad is a special dispensation by Arachin, but you need to be in the world of Arachin for that to happen. When you say Erech Stam, you're not in the world of Arachin, because you're not using the lookup tables. And because of that, you're not subject to the Hesed Yad. So that's the first possibility as to why you need the pasuk, which is that it teaches you that when you say Erech Stam, even though you have to give 3 shekel, you're not in the world of Hesed Yad. Yigad Amre, the other way around. Amre Adachan Rebavua, Nidon Hesed Yad. You get the dispensation of Hesed Yad. Mar says, Pshita, why shouldn't you? If it's Arachin, you should be in the world of Hesed Yad. Maudotema Kimifaresh Dami, I would have thought it's like you express it in the number explicitly. Kamash Balan, that we don't say that. That's the first Erech Kacha. We learn from Erech Kacha that Erech Stam, you pay 3 shekel, the lowest of the Arachin. And then you have the one of two possible nafkaminot from the Pasuk, which is either you are subject to Hesed Yad, or you're not subject to Hesed Yad. We have 2 memorot in the name of Rav Nachman that contradict each other with regards to what the conclusion was over here. Davar Acher, Ber Kacha. Again, we learn from the Pasuk Erech Kacha, Erech Kulo Utein, Enotein, Erech Evarim. It gives the Erech of the entire individual, not the Erech of the Evarim. Where it says, Va'afikte L'Erech Stam. Here the Gemara already starts to say, what are you doing? You just used Erech Kacha to teach you about Erech Stam. Now you're trying to use Erech Kacha again to teach you about Erech Kulo and not Evarim. How do you do that? Where it says, Karibay Erech Be'Erech Kacha. That you have the word, according to the way the Balei Tosafot say it, the word that you could have written was Erech. Since you didn't write the word Erech, but rather Be'erkecha, you have Yitura. You have extraneous letters over here. If you look in the Shitu Mekubetzet, Ot Tedvav, he says there's Shnei Yiturim. It's the Kaf and the Bet. When you put in Erkecha, you have a Kaf and extra at the end, you have a Bet in the beginning. So now I have 2 limudim that come from there. Rashi, on the other hand, seems to indicate Be'erkecha is not necessary at all. You didn't need to write Erech, you didn't need to write Erkecha. So Erech gives you 1 limud, Erkecha gives you the 2nd limud. So now I have 2 possible limudim. So now the Gemara says, what would have been the Havamina here? Yocho Shani Mutzi Davar Shani Shaman Tluyapo. You would have thought when it says Erech applies only to the entirety of the individual, not when you say Erech of his Yad is on me, that wouldn't work because that's an Aver. You would think that would even extend to the point that it's a Aver, or Davar Shanishamat Vuyabo, it's a vital organ or a vital Aver. So for instance, he says, Erech of the Rosh of Ruvain Alai, so then that's a vital organ. You would think that that's not subject to Arachin. Tamalomar Nafshot. That Nafshot teaches you that if there's a Nefesh, if it's a life force that's associated with it, then you are Chayab in the Erech. So normally when you say the Erech of an individual, you're speaking about the individual as in their entirety. So when you say that, you're subject to the tables and the dinim of Arachin. If you only specify one of their limbs, then you're not subject because it says Erkecha and not Evarim. It's the whole person, not the Evar. But then the Gemara qualifies and it says, what type of Evar are you speaking about? If you speak about a non-essential Evar, that's true. But if you speak about an essential Evar, that's the equivalent of saying the entirety of the individual. Because if it's something that the Neshama is Luyabo, then it's as if you basically said the whole individual in that situation. And that's what the word nafshot comes to teach you. So now the Gemara says, nafshot velo meit. Then the Braita continues and says, not only is nafshot or nefesh used for this, it's also used for the fact that it has to be alive and not passed away.
The pasuk says, "Dabel ben Yisrael, matalem ish ki afli neder be'erkachan nifashot la'Hashem." So now nifashot is teaching me number one, eiver she'nishamat huyabo. It's also now teaching me nafshot v'lo meit. Da'afikteg. Didn't you already use the word nafshot to teach you about eiver she'nishamat huyabo? Karivei nefesh nifashot. So again here, you could have written nefesh. Instead he wrote nifashot. So I have the ability to have two limudim out of the pasuk. Otziyata mate, below otziyata goseis. I would exclude a mate, but not a goseis. Tamalomar, ve'mid, ve'erich. That you have to stand up and get haracha. It says, yochid, mate namit, tibukle me'amid, ve'erich. If a goseis is excluded from a amada haracha, then certainly a mate is excluded from a haracha. So then what do I need the nefeshot for? Hachanami, you're right. Ela nefesh nefeshot lamali. So then why do I need the nefesh nefeshot? Like we're going to say further on in the Braita, which is what we're about to quote now, Davar Acher, Nifashot, Einli Ala Echad Sheirich Echad. I only have a situation in which one person was Marich another individual. Echad Sheirich Meya, one person that's Marich many other individuals. Then, Minayin, how do I know that works? Tamalomar Nifashot. That's what the word Nifashot comes to teach you, that even if there are multiple objects, then you are subject to the din of arachin over here. Davar acher. Now we're going to use the word nefashot again. Ein li'ela ish sherich ben ish ben isha. It's only if a man does arachav, whether it's a man or a woman. Isha shericha ish, a woman who does the erech of a man. Or isha shericha isha, a woman does the erech of another woman. Minayin, how do you know they're also subject to the din of arachin? Tamalomar nefashot. Again, nefashot. Davar acher. Another thing, nefashot, avim inuval, umukashchin, to include even these individuals. Mar says, va'afikte lahanach. You already used it. How many times are you going to use the word nefashot and keep saying that it's giving you more drashot? So we actually had so far four drashot from the word nefashot. And then we have a fifth one, which we're questioning now. How do you have that? One of them was nefashot below mate. That one we dropped because we got that from Mother Rachat. So that drops out of the picture. So now I have remaining four things that I'm trying to learn from the word nefashot. The last of which is what we're interested here is about mukashchin and nuval. That those individuals are subject to the parsha of arachin. There were three other things that we learned from that. One is that an individual can do arachin to multiple other individuals. Echad merich et ameya. Number two is larobot et aisha, that she is subject to the parsha of arachin if she is noder, to bring the erech of a woman or a man to the Mikdash. And we already said that to include an Eiver and the Shemat Tuyabo. So you have those three limudim, plus Menuval and Mukashchin. How do you do all of that? Gemara says, Hanach lo tzricha ikra. They don't need a pasuk. My taima, kishoko hu v'yavohu kulam. Because they are equal, therefore all of them will come together. Kishkikra, so then when we need the pasuk is for Menuval umukashchenu de itzrich. We need it for that purpose. So Rashi learns that when you have a limud from a pasuk and you have multiple options as to what the limud is, usually one of the limudim is more pashtuta pasuk or is more obvious that it derives from the pasuk. And that would become the primary limud from that word. And then everything else you would have to give either another reason or some other reboy to include them. But in a situation where the three items, or the items that you're learning out, are equally plausible explanations for the pasuk, and equally plausible reasons for the Torah to mention the word, then in that case, we can't determine between them. It's as if all of them are included in the riboy. So that's what Rashi says over here. Kishokoho v'yavu kulam, that the fact that one person can have arachin to multiple people, the fact that a woman is in the parshiyah of arachin, and the fact that evesh and shemah tu'abo, all those are very plausible explanations for the word nefashot, and therefore, they're all included from one riboy of nefesh. So now I have nefesh nefashot, so all three of those are included from one nefesh, because they're all of equal plausibility. Then I have nefashot, the extra nefesh or the riboy over there tells me that mukash, shchin, and menuval are included in the parsha of arachim, even though they have no damim. That's the way Rashi learns it. If you look at the Rabbeinu Gershom, on the other hand, he says, literally, like what the Gemara says over here, which is, Hani lo tzrichei kra. You don't need a pasuk for them. Meaning that they're obvious. The fact that one person can make declare arachin for multiple people You don't need the word nefesh or nefeshot to teach you that. That's something that would be obvious unless it's excluded. Isha should be included, even though the word ish is used over here. Generally, whenever a parshia speaks, we don't exclude a woman from any parshia. And over here again, there's no reason to exclude her. So that's the way that the Rabbeinu Gershom means it, that you don't need any riboyim for these. Those are things that are obviously included, even without a riboy. From riboy of nefesh. Then I have nefeshot. So then what's the riboy for? To come to teach you about a menuval and mukashchin, that they are subject to the parshia of arachin. Now the Gemara says, v'haya erkecha, the rabot, tumtum v'androgynos ledamim. V'haya erkecha now comes to include a tumtum and androgynos for their monetary value. Even though they're precluded from the parshia of arachin, they're still included in the parshia of damim of value. Rashi says the lima derives from the fact that the androgynous and tumtum are excluded from the parsha of Arachim because of Zechar and Nikeva. Therefore, when it says over here that we're be'erkocha, we're going to include them, so you can't include them for Erech because they're already excluded from Erech. So me'enu inyan Arachim, me'enu inyan damim, which is the closely associated part, brother to Arachim, is damim. And that's how you get the riboy of tumtum and androgynous in the world of damim. Otherwise, you have to say that it's a diok out of the exclusion of tumtum and androgynous from Arachim, where only there do we say, by Arachin, Zachar Vadai, Nekeva Vadait, that means that it's unique to the world of Arachin, and therefore, in the world of Damim, it would not be the case, and that's why they'd be subject to the din of Damim. Damim, Lamali, Krum. Why do I need a pasuk to tell me that if you say, I'm going to give the value of this individual to the Mikdash, that actually works? Below Yehela, Damei, Dikla. Why should it be any different than a tree or a palm tree? Just because they have some unique feature doesn't change the fact that they can be sold in the slave market for a value. That value is what you're donating to the Mikdash. He said, I'm going to give the value of the palm tree. He's going to have to give it. So to over here by Tumtum and Androgynous. You say, I'm going to give the value of this palm tree to the Mikdash. We don't have to figure out how, why, where it works. It's a value. You sell the item, you get the value, you know how much you owe to the Mikdash. It's a very simple process. So why would you have any consideration to exclude tumtum and androgynous? So Amar Rava, Lomar Shnidon Bichvodo. It's to tell you that it's subject to Bichvodo. Salka dat chamina, I would have thought, Neder be'erkecha k'tiv. The pasuk says, Neder be'erkecha. Kol she'eshno barachin, Nidon Bichvodo. Anyone who's subject to the parashia of Arachin is also subject to the den of Bichvodo. Kosheinu barachin, Enu Nidon Bichvodo. Anybody who's not in the parashia of Arachin is also not in the din of Bichvodo. As Rashi explains over here, Bichvodo means that the Eiver is the quote-unquote kavod of the individual, or in essence is an essential part of the individual. It represents the whole individual. So if you say, I'm going to give the head of an individual, the head represents the entirety of the person, not just that particular Eiver, not just that particular item. What he's saying is that somebody who has a din of Parsha Arachin, the Nidon Bichvodo, is learnt from this Parsha, the word Nefashot, as we saw before, and Nidon Bichvodo then is relevant in the world of Arachin, and then you can extrapolate it to other areas. So you think now, if that's true by Arachin, it's true in other areas, you need to be subject to the Parsha of Arachin in order for it to be true for you in other areas. Tumtum and Androgynous who are excluded from the Parsha of Arachin, maybe they're also excluded from the issue of Bichvodo. That's what the word Erkecha comes to teach you, that they are still in the world of Damim, which is obvious. But not only are they in the world of Damim, they're also in the world of Bichvodo. And therefore, Kamash Malan, that the Tumtum and Androgynous are subject to the world of Damim, as well as the world of Bichvodo, even though they're not in the Parshia of Arachin. So the Kamash Malan is that there isn't a correlation between the issue of Arachin and Nidon Bichvodo. That means that even items that are not subject to the Parshia of Arachin are going to be subject to the din of Nidon Bichvodo. Amarle Abaye. So Abaye says back to Rava, is that really true? Amar Abaye, lo iti barachin mi Nidon Bichvodo. Are items that are not subject to Arachin, are they really included in the world of Nidon Bichvodo, where an Aver that is Shemash Tuliabo would then make it as if you consecrated the entire item? Batanya, we have a bright that says otherwise. Rosh Eved Ze Hekdesh. Says the head of this Eved goes to Hekdesh. Who? Behekdesh Shutafim Bo. They are partners in this Eved. Rosh Eved Machur Lecha. I'm selling you the head of this Eved. Mishamnim Bineyem. We assess the value between them. Rosh Chamor Ze Hekdesh. The head of this Chamor is Hekdesh. Who? Behekdesh Shutafim Bo. You are partners with Hekdesh with regards to this. Rosh Chamor Machur Lecha. You sell the Rosh Chamor to an individual, Mishamim Neim, you assess the value between them. Rosh Para Machur Lecha, selling the head of a cow, Lo Machar El Rosha, Shel Para. Then you only sold the head of the Para. This is obviously the exceptional case. Velo Od, El Afilu Rosh Para Hekdesh, even if you say the head of the cow is Hekdesh, Ein Hekdesh El Rosha, then the head of the cow is only subject to Hekdesh, not the entirety of the cow. Amara Papa, and Rav Papa explains this by saying, Hadim is Dabin Resha the Torah Bebeit Abcha. That's because a head of a cow is sold separately in the butcher shop, but by a chamor and an eved, nobody sells the head separately, and therefore you can't separate it away from the individual. So that's why over here you could separate out the value of the head of the para, and that would be distinct from an eved and a chamor, where you would not segregate the head separately as a value. And therefore, the meaning by the Eved and the Chamor means 50%, whereas by the Para, it literally means the value of the head. So now, Rashi over here says that the words that were used in the Braita are Shutafim and Mishamnim. And Rashi just says over here, I'm not sure why the Gemara switches between Mishamnim and Shutafim. Sounds like they're the same thing. And I don't know why the Gemara makes the differentiation in the language that's used. That's how Rashi phrases it. Which would imply here that Mishamnim and Shutafim result in the same thing, which is you split it 50-50 in both of these cases. So if you're Shutafim, you're 50-50 Shutafim. If you're Mishamnim, you're 50-50 partners in this. There are Deot, the Rambam has something along these lines, whereby when you say you're Shutafim, means that you're Shutafim. You get the head, I get the rest. That's what it means, Shutafim, or Mishamnim and Eim. Sell off the value of the head, I get the rest of the value. And that is a 50-50 split. Now, the Shita Mikubetzet in Ot Yudbet, it brings an answer to Rashi's question as to what the difference is between them. He says, I found in the Rashi Ktav Yad, Yishlamar, Dimishamnim, Ratzulamar, Shishumu Melachto, Shiavodazev, Yavodazev, Ushtem, Mishtamshim Bo. The idea of Mishamnim B'Neyem is because you're dealing with a third party who you can have a relationship with or an ongoing relationship with. And therefore, you can assess the value here, and you say, he'll work for you this much time, he'll work for me this much time. That's what it means, Mishamnim De'em. Masha'en kein gabi Hekdesh. That's not true by Hekdesh. De'ein ha-hedjot yachol ishtamesh bo. Hedjot can't use it at all. Aval shutafut ba'almohud idlay. We are joint owners over here, but we're not really partners in the animal. De'mochinoto, therefore we sell it, v'chokim damav. Then we split the value, or Amar Lechada Chaveiro, good, good. Or Hekdesh, the individual says, either you buy or sell it to me. You name the price, and either you buy or sell it based on that price. So the distinction that the Shita Mikubetzet brings from the Rashi Ktav Yad is that there's a difference in the relationship. There can be a relationship where you are joint owners, and a relationship where you are partners in the item. So if you're dealing with another layperson, and there it's Mishamnim Neim, you guys can be partners, ongoing partners in the item, and you can utilize it in a way that splits it between you. You can utilize the asset, or you can sell it. By Hekdesh, you don't have that option. You're not partners in this. You are joint owners of it, and the only option is to sell it off. So that's how he explains the difference between Shutafim and Mishamnim Neim. The Baal HaTosafot bring a third answer, which is also in the name of Rashi. So interestingly, we have Rashi here, who says, I'm not sure why there's a difference. We have the Shita Mikubetzet being a Rashi Ktav Yad that says this is the distinction. And then we have Tosfa quoting Perish HaKuntres, another distinction, which is the Gabi Hekdesh Nakat Shutafu Lomar Shub Hekdesh Chokim the Makdish Behind Yafem Makdish. When it comes to the case of Hekdesh, when you are Makdish the head, it's as if you're saying we're splitting the animal 50-50. Because that person is Makdish, they do it in a generous fashion. But Gabi Mechira, when you sell something to another individual, you're not doing that in the most generous manner. You're doing that based on what you said. Therefore, Mishamnim B'Nehem, the Lashon of Shuma, meaning that you assess the value of that Eber versus the entirety of the rest of the animal. So as when I mentioned before, that there are those that believe that shutafim and mishamnim means you split it 50-50, and there are others that believe it means that you split the value of that item versus the remainder of the animal. Here, it also bifurcates it and says, depends. When you are a shutaf versus whether you are a partner because of mechira. If you are now joint owners because of mechira, then we divide the line along with whatever you articulated. Whatever you said you're going to sell, that's what you sold. Everything else is yours. Then by hektesh, where you're more generous and you would give more, there we say, if you say the head, you really meant 50% of the animal. And that's why you guys are shutafim rather than mishamnim. Shutafim means we're partners, 50-50 partners in the animal. Mishamnim means we're assessing the value of the animal because we have to divide it up. You get the head, I get the remainder of the animal. What's the difference in value over there? That's a third way to explain the difference between them. The Rosh brings another distinction again in the name of Rashi, which is that the difference between them is how fast you can execute on the item. Mishamnim is defined by immediate access to the division of the value. That's because you're dealing with a partner and you can go to the market right away and deal with it. On the other hand, when you're dealing with shutafut, with hekdesh, you can't act unilaterally or even together with hekdesh. You need to go to the gizbar in order to get an assessment of that value to determine what the split is going to be. And therefore, that's why you're shutafim, because you're going to have that ownership remain between you for a period of time until you get to the gizbar to assess that value. Nevertheless, the reason that we're bringing this brayta down is because Abaye is challenging Rova in this case. And you should just know that the Shita Mikubetzer over here changes it to Rabba. That'll become more obvious later on in the sugya. And Tosafot says the same thing, because later on in the sugya, Abaye is going to say, Mar, my master. Abaye only refers to his Rebbeim in that way, Rav Yosef and Rabba. He doesn't refer to Rova, who's his peer, with the word Mar. Therefore, they think that the gears over here should be Rabba and not Rova. So now Abaye, in challenging it, brings this brayta, and the Gemara says, based on that brayta, they're not associated with arachin, and they don't have a din of bichvodo. Seems to me there is a correlation between them. How are you overriding that correlation here for the tumtum and androgynous? The Gemara says, ulitameich tikshalach. According to that reasoning, why don't you just ask the other way around? Eved deita barachin, veino de bichvodo. You're telling me that there is a correlation? Then you have the same question in the other direction, which is that here you have an Eved that is subject to the world of Arachin, and he's not subject to Nidon Bechvodo. So it would seem to me, if you're trying to disprove Rava and say that there is a correlation, I can show you that there is no correlation, because an Eved that is subject to Arachin is not subject to Nidon Bechvodo. Even though Abaye, you did ask a fair question on Rava, your assumption that there is a correlation is also problematic. Alolo Kasho, there's no problem here. Ha bekodshe mizbeach, ha bekodshe berek habayit. The din of nidon bechvodo that's associated with the parshia of arachin is where you're donating the money to the berek habayit. Arachin, the monies go to berek habayit. So the nidon bechvodo that's in that parshia is associated with arachin when you're dealing in the world of berek habayit. On the other hand, when you're dealing with kodshe mizbeach, which is the latter brayta that we brought, that suggested that when you donate these things to the Mikdash, then you are shutafim in the item. That's speaking about kodshei mizbeach. So my kumta, you set it up now with kodshei mizbeach, aim a safe, but what are you going to do with the latter half over there? V'lohod, ela afilo amar rosh parazu ekdesh, en lehekdesh ela rosha. If you say that the head of this animal is for ekdesh, then ekdesh only gets the head. Amai, tipshot dusha bikula. The kedusha should spread to the entirety of the animal. Milo Tanya, don't we have a brayta? Omer raglash shel zo ola. You say the leg of this animal is an ola. Yochel tei kula ola. You would think that that would make the entire animal into an ola. Tamalomar kol asher iten mi menu lashem iya kodesh. Whatever you give is kodesh. Mi menu kodesh, velo kula kodesh. Whatever you give is kodesh, not the entirety of the animal, just that aver. Yochol teitzei l'chulin. You would think maybe then you don't have anything here. It can go out to chulin. Tamalomar iye behaviata tehe. It remains in its kedusha. Ha keitzad. Then what do you do with this animal? It said timacher l'tzochei olot v'damea chulin chutz midmei oto ever. You sell it off as a ola for a person who wants to buy an ola, and the monies that you get exchanged for that are all chulin because the animal is chulin. X that aver. Or in essence, what he does is he sells them the value of the animal, and he doesn't charge him for that leg. So he doesn't charge for that leg, so those remain as an olah. And then the monies that he gets exchanged for the rest of the animal are monies of chulin. Now the person who's bringing the olah, Rashi points out over here, Tosfa points out over here, that what's the problem? He now has an olah that's missing a leg. Because he's now donating to the Mikdash an olah that he purchased, but he only purchased everything besides the leg, which was given to him. It was already an olah beforehand. So how does he give an olah that's missing the leg if he was supposed to give a full-fledged olah? The Gemara in Tmura, in the beginning of Tmura, where this comes from, tells us that it's in a case where he said, Arei olai olah bechayeha. I'm going to bring an olah bechayeha. I mean, I just need to find any form of olah. As long as I can bring the olah, I don't need a whole olah. I'm not discharging my obligation by saying I need an olah. Saying I need an olah bechayeha. That allows him to bring this olah, even though it's missing the leg. That's Divrei Rabbi Meir, or the way they have it there, it's Divrei Rabbi Meir vir Rabbi Yehuda. Either in our Gemara, it's Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Shimon Omrim. The other cases, it's just Rabbi Yossi vir Rabbi Shimon Omrim. Minayin nomer raglash al zo olah, shukula olah. They disagree and say, if you say the leg of this animal is an olah, it spreads to the entirety of the animal. Tamalomar, kol ha-sheyiten mimenu la-shem, iyeh kodesh. Whatever you give to Hashem, iyeh kodesh. The whole thing is kodesh. Both at kula, to say everything is kodesh. Ba'afilu l'manda marin kula olah. Even according to Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, who say that only that aver is kadosh, not the entirety of the animal is kadosh. Hani milei daktish davashen shemat luyabo. That's only if they're maktish something where it's not a life-threatening or life-sustaining limb. Alal davashen shemat luyabo kodesha kula. If you give a life-threatening or life-sustaining limb, then they agree that the entire animal is kadosh. So here you're giving the head of the animal. The head of the animal is definitely a life sustaining aver. If that's the case, then it should have spread to the entirety of the olah. Why is the Braita telling us that it just stays on the head and doesn't spread to the remainder of the olah? Lokasha, habikdushat aguf, habikdushat damim. The difference between kdushat aguf and kdushat damim. Now we created another distinction. We started out with a distinction between bedek abayit and kodshei mizbeach. And then within the world of kodshei mizbeach, we're now subdividing it into kodshei mizbeach ledamim and kodshei mizbeach legufo. We actually have here three different sources, and we're saying each one of these sources relates to a different item. The dina here in Arachin, nidon bichvodo, that nidon bichvodo, we say speaking about kodshei bedek habayit. And over there, if you say that you're going to give something where a neshama tluya bo, it's as if you said I'm going to give the entirety of that item. It's as if I pledged the entirety of that item. So if you say Erech Rosh Ploni, it's as if you said Erech Ploni. It's the same thing because it nidon bichvodo. Then we have the Tosefta of Arachin. That's what we just quoted before. That was the Rosh Eved Zeh Hekdesh. The Rosh Chamor Zeh Hekdesh. Rosh Para Mechulach. That old braita that we just brought over here that says that you are Shutafim, but it doesn't overtake the whole item. Over there, that's speaking about kodshei mizbeach, as we noted before, but kodshei mizbeach lidamim. You're not putting this item on the mizbeach, you're not donating this to the mizbeach, you're donating its value to the mizbeach. So here, where you're makdish the head for its value, over there, we don't say that it spreads to the entirety of the animal, because it's kedushat damim, and it's not in the world of arachim. Given that, it's not nidon bichvodo, and it's subject to damim. Whatever you sell it for, whatever the value is, that's what you donated to the Mikdash. So it's eno nidon bichvodo. Then you have the braita in Tmura about ragla shalzu olah. And over there we said that's only true when it's an eiver shein neshama tluyaba. But if it's neshama shein tluyaba, it spreads to the entirety of the animal. That's speaking about kodshei mizbeach ligufo. That's when you're donating the animal to the mizbeach. When you say that regel is going to be an olah on the mizbeach, then that's the machloke, whether it spreads. You said the head of that animal is going to the mizbeach. That's the entirety of the animal being going to the mizbeach. And therefore it is nidon bichvodo. Meaning that you do spread from avish and neshamat luyaba to the entirety of the animal. So that means you have three different sources. Each one of them speaking about a different item. Gemara is going to continue to subdivide this in a second. But you have three different categories. You have kodshei bedek habayit or arachin. And you have kodshei mizbeach legufo. Both of those are subject to nidon bichvodo. The one exception is the Tosefta and Arachin, whereby you're doing kodshei mizbeach ledamim. Over there, there's no din of nidon bichvodo. That's how we're reconciled between these three sources. And tomorrow we'll discuss a bigger subdivision and the explanations behind why we differentiate between these items. So we're going to stop here, 13 lines down on the top of Hey Amud Aleph.